Thank you for joining us for this repertoire podcast. And now, your host, Scott Adams.
Hey guys, this is Scott Adams with Repertoire, and I just had a great conversation with Darwin Asa, who's the marketing manager at Midmark. And you probably, you know, in your mind, at least for me, usually I go straight to Midmark as the power table company. But this conversation was really around infection control. And as you know, I preach constantly the value of you guys delivering good content to your accounts that help them, that not necessarily help you sell more. If you'll stick with this podcast, it's about 23 minutes. It's fairly interesting. But there is some great nuggets of content in here that I think you'll get a ton out of. And more importantly, you'll be able to take back. I would take notes during this one to take back to your accounts. He just said to me offline, I wish we would have had it recorded. A great question for the distribution reps to be asking is, from an infection prevention standpoint, would you want your patients watching how you're doing everything? And that's everything from washing your hands to instrument processing. There, like I said, there's just a ton of cool stuff that you don't think about when you think infection control or infection prevention. So hopefully you'll stick with it and you'll get a ton out of this podcast. Hey guys, Scott Adams here with Repertoire Magazine, and I have Darwin Asa, marketing manager for Midmark, with me today. And we're having a pretty timely conversation given all of the COVID and the new norm and all the other terms you want to use out there around infection prevention and kind of that renewed emphasis on the ambulatory care level or at the ambulatory care level. And so Darwin, I'm excited to have you on today, man. Where are you at? What part of the world are you in today?
Hi Scott. I'm also really happy to be with you today. I'm actually in beautiful Cincinnati here, where we're kind of having a nice kind of end of summer day here. It's beautiful.
Ah, the Queen City. I love it. We are having similar weather down here in Atlanta. And if as bad as 2020 has been, I will say our spring and fall have been amazing this year. So I'm thankful for that. But without further ado, man, let's jump into some of these questions that I have for you. And I'm really excited just given this whole kind of as we're coming out of COVID and heading into a new year to talk about some of the things that are going on around infection prevention and some of the things that you guys at Midmark are seeing. Mm-hmm. You're always cutting edge as far as I'm concerned whenever I talk with you, the whole organization. So first question I got for you is, you know, there was a study done on healthcare associated infections, also known as HAISs, found that 70% of multi-drug resistant organisms or MDR O's originated from the ambulatory care setting. So all of that is a mouthful right there. But now that we're in a COVID-19 virus era with the dangers associated with that and possible transmissions, have you guys seen a renewed interest in infection prevention in that ambulatory care or alternate site setting?
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, COVID-19 is just kind of the latest in a series of pathogens that physicians have had to deal with. And what it's really done is it's kind of made everybody take a look at their infection control procedures and what they're doing, you know, from day to day. You know, because what people found was, you know, every office or facility, you know, practices infection control. It's just part of what they do. But what we saw was, you know, kind of a very laissez-faire attitude from the practitioners about their infection control. You know, they weren't really putting a lot of thought or a lot of effort into maybe, you know, what had been in place for years. And, you know, nobody was really thinking about it. It wasn't top of mind. You know, we were doing it, but there wasn't a lot of focus on it. And that the attitude that we would run into was that, well, we're not having any problems, so everything must be okay. And COVID really shook that up. Because now here you have a highly contagious, you know, dangerous organism that has to be dealt with. And you've got to, you know, use that as not really, you know, view it as a crisis, but really an opportunity for practices to kind of take a look at what they're doing in infection prevention and go beyond that minimum standard. And that's been the response we've seen, you know, all over the country.
Yeah, it doesn't surprise me. When you say that, and interestingly enough, in the first part of my career, shockingly 27 years ago, I started out with a company called HealthLink. We sold lotions and potions and surface disinfectants and all of that good stuff. And, you know, I never thought about kind of the setup of a facility, but in that ambulatory care setting where, you know, they require kind of a comprehensive prevention plan that should incorporate every aspect of the facility. What role can the facility and the workflow design play within the infection prevention category?
No, I mean, that's a good point, because what we see now is there's definitely a move to more what is referred to as patient-centered workflows when you're looking at the design of a facility. Because what people have found is that, you know, by managing the workflow and managing how patients and caregivers are circulating through the site, you can actually, you know, make infection control better. You can strengthen what you're doing. Because by doing things and setting up your office a certain way, you know, that's going to limit the patient interactions and the movement for the, through the facility. It's going to limit the potential for exposure of the patients or your staff to any kind of contagious organism that may be coming in. And, you know, I mean, one of the best examples we have is, you know, a lot of practices have begun to adopt what's called the collaborative care model, where now what they're doing is, you know, you're bringing the ancillary services into the exam room, and you're not having the patient circulate from place to place. Instead, you know, those services come to them. And this is one example of what people have been doing to kind of really minimize the contact that patients and staff have both with each other and also with the equipment in the practice. And that really kind of helps reduce the transmission of a potential contagion.
You know, under this kind of new norm that we're in, and due to COVID-19, I'm assuming it's pretty crucial to reduce non-essential interactions as much as possible in the practice. How can eliminating some of that, maybe in the waiting room, and incorporating a dual access model help with infection prevention? And maybe even go a step further and talk about what a dual access model is.
Yeah, no, that's also a really good point, because, you know, I think COVID has kind of opened people's eyes to the fact that probably the most dangerous space that they have in their practice is actually the waiting room. You know, having a crowded common waiting area is really just an ideal environment for people to get exposed to all kinds of different contagions, especially now with COVID or even during flu season. And what people see is that, you know, if you move away from having that waiting room to something like a self-rooming model, where you're bringing your patients directly into the exam space, and that they're not sitting around in the waiting room, is really something that, you know, people should give some serious thought to doing, and a lot of practices have adopted. But also what we're dealing with is, many older offices were designed in such a way that they're very linear, and there's just a lot of shared corridors and a lot of shared spaces where patients and staff are constantly interacting with each other, and basically they get crowded. You have things all over the place, and that just kind of sets up another environment where things are going to get passed from person to person. And instead of doing that, what we're seeing more and more is people want to look at things like a dual access model, where you've got separate entrances into an exam space, for instance, you know, one for patients and one for providers, where you don't have that shared space. You've kind of segregated the providers from the patients, and they only meet in one area, and you go with kind of an on-stage, off-stage, centralized areas where the providers are inhabiting, and then they move into and out of where the patients are. So you never mix these things together. And that's a model that a lot of people are starting to embrace now.
So it's interesting, this next question, and as I'm thinking through it in a real world situation, even right now, when we start talking about, you know, contact tracing, the White House obviously has got COVID running through it. And they're trying to trace back to where in the world did this thing start? How did it get in here? That's obviously a concern in the healthcare facilities as well. Are there any, do you know of any technologies out there that are available to help automate some of that process when we talk about contact tracing and ambulatory care?
No, yeah, absolutely. It's basically contact tracing, you know, sounds like it should be so simple, but it's actually in a healthcare environment, it's pretty complicated, because now what you would have to do is, you know, you've got a lot of manually people going through EMR records, staffing schedules, things like that to figure out who interacted with who at what time. And, you know, it just becomes a real difficult trail to follow. And then you start adding that along with, you've got to interview people, you got to talk to people, and then you've got to start to look at what equipment was in those areas. You know, it gets really complicated really fast. But fortunately, one thing that can really help, that's a technology that, you know, again, we're seeing people really embrace, is what's called real-time locating systems, or RTLS technology. And what this does is this basically has patients and staff that are assigned badges that will automatically collect location data in the background on a piece of software that essentially, if you need to do contact tracing and you need to know who interacted with who and for how long and what instruments or equipment were in that particular room when things were going on, all of that can now be tracked by RTLS. And that just eliminates a lot of the guesswork and, most importantly, a lot of the time and the effort that's required to do contact tracing for both people and even equipment.
That's amazing. I didn't even know that that was available or a technology, but given where we are today in life, it's obviously timely, and glad to know that we have some of that out here. I'd like to kind of shift gears a little bit and talk about, you know, in between patient visits. And I mentioned earlier in the podcast, you know, working at HealthLink, I'd be in practices all the time trying to convince practices, hey, you really need to be spraying these Midmark tables down in between patients, especially where their hands are on the table, where table paper doesn't cover and that type of stuff. You know, are there some things out there, some features that can be included in some of that equipment, like exam chairs or diagnostic devices, to maybe make that a little more simple, make the process more simple and quick, a little quicker?
Yeah, I mean, very simply, there are several things to look for in, you know, kind of these high touch surfaces or equipment. You know, you want to have things that are seamless. You want to have things where you don't have a lot of crevices or cracks or areas that are hard to reach or hard to clean. And then, you know, you'll even find equipment that has antimicrobial materials incorporated into them. So basically what it comes down to is if you've got any area or a surface that's going to prevent you from getting complete access to it when you're using something like a disinfectant, and that can be a seam or a groove or a corner or something like that, you know, that's going to act as a harbor for potentially dangerous microorganisms. And what you want to have is you want to look for products that have engineered these areas to be completely accessible. And, you know, also, like I said, you can find things now like door handles and countertops and things like that that are either made out of copper or have copper infusion in them. And, you know, people have done the studies to show that, you know, things that are copper or infused with copper have a antimicrobial activity on their own. So that's just another thing that you can do to help kind of prevent the spread of infection. So even if you didn't clean it, you know, the surface itself may be able to help disinfect itself.
Hey guys, we obviously can't put together these podcasts without sponsors like Midmark. And I want to take just 30 seconds and let you hear from our sponsor.
As a clinical environmental design company with more than 100 years of experience at the point of care, Midmark is changing how care is delivered by enabling better outcomes and a better care experience for patients and caregivers. Midmark has an unmatched understanding of the point of care, including how people interact within it, how it is impacted by equipment and technology, and most importantly, how it continues to evolve and change, and what that means for patients and caregivers. Midmark provides customers with the new approaches, innovative technologies, and proven solutions they need to enhance and strengthen the point of care experience for patients and caregivers. For more information, visit www.midmark.com.
So, Darwin, talk to me a little bit about some of the barriers that are out there for, you know, incorporating some of these infection prevention measures around the alternate site space. You know, what can providers really do in their facilities to overcome some of those challenges?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, we touched on it a little bit earlier. Really, the biggest barrier to looking at, you know, your infection prevention program is simply just attention and lack of knowledge. You know, there's a lot of ignorance, believe it or not, in the healthcare field around things like disinfection. But then when you move into things like instrument processing and sterilization, you know, just that knowledge gap just gets bigger and bigger. And, you know, one of the best things that you can do is, you know, spend the time and effort to really review the current state of what that facility is doing, but then also, you know, help update that clinician and that staff, you know, how to do infection prevention. And that's really key because a lot of times they don't know, you know, they didn't get that in their educational background. They're looking to people like us to be a resource to help them understand, you know, where they might be able to make improvements.
You know, for those listeners out there listening right now, Darwin just said something key there. We talk about it all the time in the magazine and in different areas around, you know, repertoire and its content. And I think that this infection control conversation is such great content for you to bring this conversation to your accounts right now, that to his exact point, they may not have picked up in school, and it just makes their practice more safe, more efficient, and all of the things that they need to be doing that sometimes they forget, you know, and kind of tagging right along into that. One of the things that I think that they oftentimes overlook is the instrument processing part of it, which is a critical part of any infection prevention program. You know, providers tend to sometimes just miss that. You know, Darwin, can you talk a little bit what providers can do to kind of get themselves reacquainted with the processing program that you guys do?
Yeah, sure. No, absolutely. I mean, when we talk about instrument processing, what that's referring to is, you know, when you have instruments that you've used in a procedure, whatever it may be, in whatever type of practice, you know, one of the things that you often have to do is, you know, you're going to reuse that instrument on the next patient. So in between patients, you have to clean and sterilize those instruments. And just like it sounds, instrument processing is really a process. Now, the issue that we run into again and again is that, you know, the physicians typically do not do instrument processing. That's usually done by a staff member. And what that does is that kind of takes it out of the attention of the physician. And really, it turns into something that happens in the back room. And kind of the attitude becomes, well, we don't have any problems, so what we're doing must be okay. And that's really kind of a missed opportunity. The other thing that we often find is, again, this kind of goes back to the lack of knowledge that we talked about earlier, is that, you know, a lot of the healthcare professionals in their educational background, you know, training and what they learned about things like instrument processing and sterilization is, I mean, it's really minimal. You know, the doctor went to medical school to learn how to do procedures and take care of patients. He didn't, you know, go there to learn how to sterilize instruments. And, you know, that's kind of a barrier that, again, we can help overcome. Because unfortunately, because people don't really understand, they have a very simplistic view of instrument processing is, you know, they think that's just sterilization and it's all the same. But it's not. You know, there's really a process involved with doing that, making instruments clean and then sterile before you know, reuse them on the next patient. And there's a process that really needs to be followed. And a lot of the healthcare providers out there are just ignorant of that. And one way that you can help them learn the best practices as to how they should be handling this is, you know, there's a lot of good material on the CDC website, you know, where they describe the process in detail and some of the best practices for doing that instrument processing in a healthcare setting. And, you know, this is the kind of thing that you're going to want to look at, understand, and make sure if you're a practitioner that these best practices are incorporated into your program. So again, it's an opportunity for us to help educate the clinician to make their practice better.
You know, you kind of answered this next question, but I want to ask it because I think it's fairly important when you talk about an effective instrument processing workflow. What are some things in the alternate site setting that, you know, they need to be including to have a quality instrument processing operation?
Yeah, is essentially instrument processing is broken down into five key task areas. And those are things like, you know, the first area is where you've got to be receiving, cleaning, and decontaminating things. Then you need an area for preparing and packaging them for sterilization. Then you've got to have a sterilizer to actually do the sterilization, but you've also got to monitor what that sterilizer is doing, because eventually, you know, you're going to get audited by somebody and you're going to have to prove to them that you've been doing safe sterilization. And then lastly, you also need an area where you're going to want to store things that you sterilized. And some of the key things to look for in a practice is to make sure that they've dedicated adequate space for instrument processing. Because again, like we talked about, this is the kind of thing that's out of sight, out of mind, it's in the back room. So people tend to jam this someplace in like an old closet, Or, you know, the other thing that we see is, you know, instrument processing should be in its own dedicated area. There's a number of reasons to do that, but oftentimes we find things like sterilizers sitting on a countertop in a lab. We've seen sterilizers and instrument processing being done in the break room in some kind of shared space. You know, these are just, you know, simple things that you think the healthcare professionals would know, but they don't. And just, you know, pointing out that they really should have a separate area to do this is really important. Another thing that we find is, you know, more and more procedures are being pushed out into the ambulatory setting. And that means the number of sterilizations that people are doing every day, week, month keeps going up. So you want to make sure that they've got enough instrumentation to support what they're doing. And also, people tend to, if they bought into a practice or, you know, they've joined a practice and inherited an office, you know, you might find a sterilizer in there that's, you know, 15, 20 years old. And, you know, things like sterilizers have a limited lifetime. You know, you want to make sure that they've got something that's up to date. And then last but not least, you want to make sure that when they're doing that instrument processing, so they're going through those steps, that kind of the instruments are flowing always from dirty to clean. Because you'll find places where people are kind of crossing over each other or, you know, mixing things up across the room they're working in. And again, these are all just kind of bad ideas from a productivity and a safety standpoint. So it sounds like a lot, but, you know, there are really some real simple things when you take a look at, you know, where people are sterilizing their instruments. You know, you can spot some things right away. Is it too small? Is it mixed in with something else? You know, does the sterilizer look like something from 1986? You know, those are the kind of things that you can help with.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's for those of us in the industry, we talk infection control, infection prevention on a regular basis. So it kind of is always top of mind for us. But what I've found over the last probably 5 or 6 months is how much the general public has taken notice of how clean a restaurant is or how clean an airplane is before they get on it. And obviously they're going to be thinking the same thing, maybe even more so when they go into a dental practice or a physician office. Are there some things that you've seen or you know of to help physicians to educate their patients on what they're doing around infection prevention and the programs they're doing?
Yeah, no, that's a great point, Scott, because you're absolutely right. Patients are now more knowledgeable than ever about infection control, and they are asking physicians, you know, show me what you're doing to keep me safe. You know, and this is something that physicians have never had to really confront before to any large degree. But if you've got an area where you're doing instrument processing and it's clean and well-organized and has monitoring equipment in it, you know, that's something that you're going to want to show off and that you can use as a marketing tool to help build your practice. You know, not only is it going to reassure your existing patients that you're keeping them safe, but also as you're trying to recruit new patients into the practice, you know, we've seen people have, you know, walkthrough videos posted on their websites of here's all the great things we're doing in doing sterilization that's keeping you safe. So please come to my practice. You know, it literally is something that, you know, a lot of people, if you ask them today, would you show that area to your patients? A lot of them will say no. And if the answer is no, that means there's an opportunity there for them to get better. And yeah, that's what you want to be looking for.
You know, I know I've kept you for a little bit longer than I had intended to, but I do have one final question mm-hmm. for you. And what I'd like you to do, if you can, is kind of tie a bow on this entire podcast for us and just talk a little bit about, you know, what impact a strengthened or an incredible infection prevention program can have on the healthcare experience by, you know, not just the patients and providers, but ultimately, you know, the delivery of care as a whole.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no problem. I mean, right now, it's just like we've talked about, infection control gets seen as a necessary evil that just consumes time and resources. But the way, you know, we should really look at it is it's an opportunity to become more productive and to make patients and staff safer. You know, because by having a good infection control program in place, you're going to minimize the risk of infection for patients and staff, obviously. But one thing you're also going to do is, because we now have so many things that we're doing in terms of managing patients and patient flow, you know, we're starting to kind of bottleneck our procedures, the number of procedures that you can do. And if you've got a bottleneck on your procedure side and you've got a bottleneck on your sterilization instrument processing side, you know, that's going to really cut down on your patient turnover and, you know, the profitability of the practice. So what you want to do is you want to try to relieve those bottlenecks by looking at the, you know, office design as well as what you're doing in instrument processing. And then last but not least, you know, again, you can't underestimate the value of marketing that safety to patients, because this is something that people, it's really impressive when you can show patients that you are doing everything possible to keep them safe, to come into their office. And likewise, your staff is going to appreciate that as well, because not only are you keeping the patient safe, you're helping to keep them safe. And that's something that will even help, you know, cut down on the staff turnover that so many offices experience. So the bottom line is just, you know, COVID, yeah, it's been a horrible pandemic, but it's really given people an opportunity to kind of reassess what they're doing in infection control, you know, put some hard thought into it and make some improvements. And for little investment, you know, the benefits are just huge in terms of, you know, patient and staff safety and office productivity and profitability.
Darwin, I can't thank you enough, man. That podcast was packed full of good content. I really want to thank Midmark for the work that you guys do in the healthcare setting, and especially given these last, you know, 7 months that we've all been in the forefront of America's eyes in the healthcare space. And just thank you so much. Thank you for your time today. And I know the audience will get a ton out of this podcast.
Great. Thanks, Scott. It's a pleasure to be with you. Thanks again.
I just want to again thank Midmark so much for sponsoring the podcast, but also, as always, man, they just deliver such good content for you guys. Hopefully you got a ton out of that. You took some notes and have some great content to take back to your accounts. The beautiful thing about infection control is everybody has to do it and everybody needs it. So anyways, good luck selling out there. I thank you guys for everything you do to provide all of the MedSurg products to the caregivers taking care of America. You guys have a great week, and we'll look forward to talking to you again soon. Thank you.